Hello everybody and welcome to this live session. It is Sunday the 7th of June. Let's get stuck straight into it. We've got a few exciting things to talk about. I'm just going to share my screen straight up and going over to our Trello board. And I'll just turn my phone on silent and turn it upside down so it doesn't distract me like it always does. And communication today, the live session, the things that we're going to be covering today, the main topic being Elements of Great Teamwork Part 3. We're going to be talking about feedback. But a few things before that. First of all, I have sent those wristbands out for the What Can I Do For You concept to a few of the practices that are involved and requested them. I hope you all received them. If you haven't, there's been something gone awry because I definitely sent them all out. And I have developed a card. So just click on the, and again, I'm just going to copy that and put it down in the activity. So once a line goes through it, it's still obvious. But just click on that card and it will take you straight through to a What Can I Do For You card. And within that, I've got the Australasian Dental Practice Magazine article that I wrote a little while ago on this concept, this question of what can I do for you? So you can read that when you're trying to relay the information to a group of team members. Sometimes it's difficult to get the passion that you feel behind the delivery of it. So that may be able to help you if you just print that out, pop it in your staff room. The other thing that might help, of course, is the video. And so I've posted some videos are quite the live sessions I record through Zoom, and then I've got storage within Zoom.
Hi, I'm Julie Parker. Thank you so much for joining.
But other videos that I do that aren't part of a live session, they're more of a tutorial. If they go on for a longer period of time like this one did, I'm going to be posting it to YouTube. And only people who have the link can see it. So it's not kind of freely available, but if you've got the link, you can see it. So that's why every now and again, you will see videos appear on the YouTube channel instead. But this video, 10 minutes, a great one to deliver to your team members if you are going to be doing the What Can I Do For You concept, implementing that as part of your team culture, because this video will give them all the information that they need in order to roll it out in the future. So that is all housed in a card called What Can I Do For You? And it's under the docs, links, etc. We have successfully ticked off the first thing off our agenda. And it's only 3 minutes past two. That's magnificent. The next thing I want to talk about is my excitement about the club. As you know, we've rebranded from C19 Group Coaching Program to the club, and it is going to be a product that's pushed out to the rest of the market. I have in my very, you know, YouTube is my university, and I built my own website just through YouTube tutorials, so it's magnificent, and then just converting part of that website into a membership site. Of course, you know, you think these things are going to be straightforward, but then it takes hours and hours. And so that's all good. So that's why I am very excited. So first of all, on the website, you'll be able to click in to a page called The Club. This is a page that's open to everybody. So basically it's the marketing page for the product itself. And you'll just see there, it's under the homepage there. And you'll see there that it just talks about what the club is and what you guys have experienced to date. I have taken snippets and I've only used initials because I haven't gained any approval from any of you as yet. But I've just popped in snippets of conversations that you guys have shared with me on via email. And so that's an area where I want to populate more so with testimonials. And so if you're really enjoying this group coaching format and the value that you get from it, I'd love to hear from you, because then I'll be able to post that up when and if you do send any testimonial or reference to the club through to me. Also, let me know whether you would like me to just use your initials or whether I should use your full name. That's up to you completely. And so that's what that's all about. It's going to be $495 a month. You guys maintain your 3 month free membership. So that's always going to be groovy. And And I'm thinking too, and I'll pop it into action, that $4.95 a month for the people that are already part of the club, I'm thinking of having it at a reduced rate for you guys for the next 3 months, because there might be some usual little barriers when you're implementing something new. So I want it to be a beautiful experience for you, and I want to rely on you for a bit of help and feedback around how things are going. So I will reduce that cost down for your subsequent 3 months if you wanted to participate. I'm going to write that time. Oh, I'll remember that. I don't need to write that down for myself. The next page is the Club Hub, the members only page. And when normally people jump onto that page, this is what they'd see, that you have to be a club member to be able to go into that page. But this is what it looks like. This is not as well populated as Trello at the moment. What I wanted to do, I'm aware that within Trello, when you put your email up there, everyone can see it and everyone can see who's on as part of the group. I understand that might be a barrier for some people. Some people feel a bit more private about, you know, reaching out to get a bit of guidance and assistance with the progress of their practice. And so I wanted to be able to have a page on the website that eventually is as populated as Trello. Trello has obvious benefits. You can highlight in there, identify topics in there that you want me to focus on going into the future. You can see the schedule of events coming up. You can have all the links to different cards, so I don't have to rewrite the same information with every card, because I'm just linking back to other cards that we've dealt with in the past. So Trello has such obvious benefits to it, but this can be a nice backup for those people that don't want to be part of Trello. And so part that, so I've called it the Club Hub. I'm just loving how this is evolving, the Club Hub. Woo-hoo. And so this is where people can catch up with the recording of the last session, live session. They can get full access to all past live session recordings. There will be a link there to join the community on Trello, which I suggest, and also the link there to share ideas, discuss challenges, and support your community within the club on the Facebook group. And then scrolling down, you'll be able to see in the first section, it's catch up on what's just happened. As of this day today, the 7th of June, there's register here for the next session, which is today. The doing session, which was the most previous doing session, will always be hovering up there. That was the Google Calendar session. And the live session, the most previous live session, will be up there as well, the recording of that. And then scrolling down, that's all the recordings of the previous live sessions. And I've just put in key topics that we covered, so it's easy to navigate your way through to the topics that you are interested in, to the recordings that you are interested in. Rolling further down, talking a little bit about Trello, and just an encouragement of all the, you know, highlighting the benefits to encourage all the members to become part of Trello. And then the Facebook join now. So if ever you need the Facebook link, it's all within the members only page, which is called the Club Hub. And I will be adding you all to the Club Hub. So expect an email from me. It might be today. It depends on how long it takes me to navigate myself, my way through the process. Some of these things, just adding people to the membership. It could be a very straightforward thing, or it could be complicated. I will learn as I go. So that is all of that. So when you look at this card, the Club Hub page, I'm going to just copy that and put that down the bottom under activity as another point of activity. So then when you do get the sign in for the Club Hub, then you can easily find the link for it, although I will be, of course, including that in the email follow-up that I'll send out to you. So we talked about the club page. We've talked about the Club Hub. So you'll see that thanks to one of our magnificent members suggested that we utilise our next session on the 10th of June. That's Charles Coves is our guest speaker on the 10th of June. I'm just going to drag that up here. Oops. And he's talking about building great dental teams that create wonderful business results, such a key topic of what we've been talking about over the last few live sessions with the elements of great teamwork. So that is a very timely topic. So thank you to this member that suggested the topic. And also thank you to this member for suggesting that we actually make that live session, we open it up to the whole market, as a way of, one, exposing everyone to great insights and strategies, but also as a way of promoting the club out to the broader market. And so that's what we've done. I sent out an email regarding that to the list just this morning, or around lunchtime it was. So that's exciting. So thank you for that. I'm super pumped around getting some people interested in the club, like you guys are interested in the club. So it's a reminder. So we our next session here, 10th of June, there's the registration link if you want to make sure you participate live. The benefit of participating live is that you can ask questions if you want to. So utilize that benefit. Okay, moving forward, getting into the gutsy part of the live session today, and we are talking about feedback. And I have created a card with the bits and pieces that I'm going to be talking about today. So I'll click into that card, first of all, but then stop sharing my screen for a moment, just so we can have a bit of a chat. I'll be glancing down at my notes, and so I have an ordered sequence of the information I want to share with you today. Now, with feedback, traditionally, the thoughts around feedback are one employee gets approached by a superior or a manager or the owner or another employee, and it's in response to them making a mistake or doing something not an ideal fashion. And we then say to that person, you made a mistake there, you didn't do it quite right, what we would like you to do is do it like this. With that kind of scenario, whenever a manager says to an employee, can we have a quick chat? The employee generally is like, oh my God, what's this about? It's always something bad, because we are not so much in the habit of telling the people that we work with of all the great things that they're doing well. And so whenever we want to chat, it's usually to correct our behavior in some way or ask us to do an action in a different way. There are obvious problems with that. When you recognize that most of us in the working world, or even in probably in all world, in our intimate world and in friendship world, family world, but everybody within a working environment, a majority of people do have this fear that they will be seen as incompetent in some way about something. It's an awful feeling to have, and it's an awful thing to think that somebody else has that perception around us. And I quite often come across this as a coach when I go into a new practice. If there's an existing practice manager or receptionist that's doing some management duties, then my presence there is challenging that person, as this person's here to highlight what I'm not doing great or to highlight things that I could be doing great, but I'm not. And so as a result, I'm going to be seen as a little bit or majorly incompetent. And funnily enough, it gets my back up. It makes me feel fearful. It makes me either get my back up or I want to retreat away and I become withdrawn. But it doesn't normally have somebody think to themselves, this is absolutely fantastic. I can't wait to see all the things that I can do to improve on what I'm doing right now. It's just a tremendous gift to me. We don't normally have that reaction. And so the space around feedback is normally the person giving the feedback knowing that it's going to have, they may not know specifically how it's going to impact on that person, but they know there's a strong chance the person won't take it 100% well, whether they show that or not. And it has the recipient person, the person receiving the feedback, in a guarded space. The defenses are up. I don't know if I'm going to be attacked. I don't know how to respond to this kind of feedback. And so quite often the process of feedback isn't a comfortable one and isn't a successful one. The way around that, there are certainly different ways around that. And one of the things that we can do as managers or as owners of a dental practice is to create a different meaning to what feedback actually is. Because at the moment, left to their own devices, feedback means challenging space for most people. How can we shift that, flip that meaning to be something much more positive, even better, something that helps us thrive and something that we want this feedback to come through. And so that's what we're talking about today. How can we flip that? I speak a lot about constant and never-ending improvement. I truly believe that developing constant and never-ending improvement, or C-A-N-I, can I, as a concept, as part of your culture, your team culture, this is what's going to empower your team. And it certainly does flip what feedback means for your team. So let's look further into that. Sharing my screen. It's going to have a little glancy-poos at who's online with us at the moment. Beautiful. Oh, is it Dalia? I'm not quite sure if you can put through the chat if I am pronouncing your name correctly, Dalia, but I added you just before the meeting started, and I'm thrilled that you are part of the group today. So if I have mispronounced your name, I do apologize. So the first thing I want to just show you is my slide that I just created that reminds you, I think I've got a little response here to see if I'm actually pronouncing the word correctly. D is fine. Thank you so much. You're lovely, D. So, D, you wouldn't have heard about this, although other members have. I talk a lot about team culture, and when you get team culture right, all of a sudden everything becomes much easier in terms of identifying areas to improve as a team and as a business, and then putting great steps in place to make sure those improvements do get carried out. And my concept of can I, constant and never-ending improvement, it's something that there's a motivational speaker in America, Anthony Robbins. He's been around for many, many years, and he talks a lot about can I, constant and never-ending improvement, this journey that we don't want to stay where we are. We don't want to be stagnant. We want to make sure that in 10 years from now, we're much better, much more effective in our lives and enjoying our lives much more than we are right now. We want to have those 10 years mean something. But in order to improve, we need to understand that there are things to improve, that if we were aware of it, we're probably already improving them. So there's possibly things outside of our awareness that we can improve upon. There's also certain elements that go into can I, constant and never any improvement. They must be in place in order for us to move down that journey of improvement. And it's these four things. And I'll talk about each one of them. Just take a little sip of my drink. So in order for us to achieve constant and never ending improvement in our lives, we, number one, have to truly shift our belief around mistakes. We need to truly believe that mistakes are crucial to improvement. In fact, there is no skill that you have learned to date that you have not learned as a result of making mistakes. Everything you do has been finessed to the level you're doing it right now because you make mistakes and you adjust. And you make mistakes and you adjust and you make mistakes and you adjust. You're constantly getting better and better. And if you consider the example of a little baby learning to walk, they're tottering around. I don't have children of my own. I think it's 11 or 12 months they start to walk, but they're gradually getting up on their feet and they walk a step and then they drop down on their bum. And then they get up again, they walk a couple of steps and then they drop down again. At no point does the parent ever look at that child and go, well, look, they've tried 20 times now. This is ridiculous. That's it. You've had your shot. Stop it. Stop making those mistakes. Just stop even trying. That's a skill you obviously can't learn. No. And every parent with their child, with every skill they're learning, at no point do they look at their child and think to themselves, that's it, you're never going to learn it. You just keep saying the same thing to that child, try again. And as we continue to get up and use our little legs, that little child, eventually they start to walk. But when you think about when you were learning English, when you were learning to write, when you were learning to swing on the monkey bars, when you were learning how to hold a suction as a dental nurse, hold a drill as a dentist, everything came with mistakes. All of these skills came with mistakes. Yet, when we move into adulthood, in all parts of our lives, we make mistakes and we're like, no, I wish I hadn't made a mistake. I feel ashamed of myself. I feel embarrassed. Why can't I be better? Other people don't make mistakes like I make mistakes. And all of a sudden we start to resist all the mistakes. And therefore, when we get into working teams and someone makes a mistake, we think it's a bad thing. Yet, we also still want that person to continually improve. If you ask any boss of a team or manager of a team, and you ask the question, do you want your team to remain exactly as they are, or do you want them to get better? Everyone's going to say, we want to always get better. That's part of business. We want to get better and better at what we do. And in order for us as a team to get better and better, each individual team member needs to get better and better. It's the collective impact, that synergy of all of our skills developing together that makes the team get better as a unit. So in order for us as a team to truly have as a core part of our culture this constant, never-ending improvement concept, it also means you must shift your beliefs as individuals and as a team, therefore as a team, around what mistakes mean to you. And I will remind you, and Dee, for your benefit, talk to you about the mistakes policy that JPPS has developed. It is heavily influenced by 3M's mistakes policy that they have over in America. It's not the 3MSB one here, or 3M Australia, or whatever it's called now. 3M Dental? 3M Oral, I can't remember what it's called. But this is it's tweaked slightly just to be more relatable for all of us. But this is the mistakes policy that I strongly encourage everyone to adopt within their practice. And by adopt, I don't mean print out, everyone nod their head and pop it up on the staff room wall and go, yeah, that's how we're going to act now. I mean truly act to that. You won't get this right from the start. This is the glorious thing about continually improving in life. You don't get it right at the start. So just because this mistakes policy gets printed up, whacked on the wall, and you try it out for the first time, it doesn't quite work, or you forget about even trying it out for the first month, it doesn't matter. Just try again. Here it is. Mistakes are a sign of having tried. We will forgive honest mistakes that are made in the pursuit of legitimate practice goals. We learn by mistakes and they become part of our collective knowledge. Mistakes born of a negative attitude are not to be repeated. That last line takes away the fear that some people have that if I just embrace all the mistakes, then I'm going to be embracing bad attitudes. No, that's not the case at all. What this is recognizing, what this is embracing, are concepts that need to be in play in order for people and therefore the team to improve. If you truly shift your belief around mistakes, and mistakes instead of something becoming something that people fear making or fear the fallout of them making that mistake, they instead are going, I made a mistake, groovy. What is it highlighting to me that I should improve for next time? Or this is feeling good. I'm feeling myself progress here. Wildly different. Because when there's a blame culture within your team, people are either avoiding to do anything outside of the norm, outside of the safe, because what's the point? If I make a mistake, they just heap it on me and I don't want that feeling. So what's the point of trying harder or trying something different that could be better? I don't want that fallout. Or there's such a blame culture, and I've seen this many times, and many of you have likely worked in these sort of environments. There's such a blame culture that the minute somebody else makes a mistake, you become part of the people that dump it on that person, because at least it's not happening to me. I'm pleased that the finger's not pointing at me. I'm so happy about that. I'm happy to point it at somebody else. So shifting the mistakes culture within you, the way you as a team believe what mistakes mean to you, as go from something negative to something magnificent that helps us improve, then you are well and truly on the path of constant and never-ending improvement. The next thing that needs to be in play in order for our teams to constantly and never-ending improve is practice. Practice promotes improvement. Quite often, I have heard the thing, I've told them, the staff member how to do this twice already, and they're still not doing it correctly or to my standard. Having that person practice, practice, practice means they will become master of that skill. No one masters complex skills after just a couple of times, and not many people master basic skills after just a couple of opportunities to try it out. So embracing the fact that practice and repetition are what build skill development is another key element of constant and never-ending improvement, because quite often we may say, sure, you can make mistakes, but I'm not going to give you the time and the opportunity to practice and repeat the task. And so therefore it still doesn't roll out effectively. So giving people the gift of time, the gift of patience, and that generosity of spirit that goes around, yes, we embrace practice and repetition, will again assist you in the constant and never-ending improvement journey. And it's within practice that the role playing becomes a crucial element to implementing anything new in your practice. The role playing, there is a guide. I'll click onto my card of role playing. There's the role playing guide there. And I'm going to share that card, copy that little link there, go back into my team feedback card. And I'm going to pop it there as an activity. So you can easily, Let me go back into role playing again and share. Copy that link. Edit that comment. Put the correct thing in there. That'll help. I'll actually even identify it. Role playing. And so you can see what I'm doing here. I'm going to put an asterisk, two of them, immediately before role playing and immediately after. And what that does is make role playing bold. Don't you love that? So that's the role playing guide. And role playing allows team members to do two things. One, here's the system, let's role play it out so we can figure out if it's going to run out smoothly when we are next called upon to perform this system. So we can overcome minor barriers, we can overcome little things like, oh, it's a new patient experience, but I don't know where the new patient forms are, so I need to know where they are. So it helps us to identify any issues with the system itself. But it also provides the opportunity for team members to take action on this new system and do it again and again and again and get a little bit of practice under their belt. So when they are next called upon to roll out that system, they will be able to do it rather than go frozen in the moment, deer in the headlights, oh shit, ah, I gotta do it, don't know how to do it, can't quite, I gotta get more practice. So practice promotes improvement, another key element to constant and never-ending improvement. Another one is get comfortable with conscious incompetence. This is the learning zone. So when we talk about comfort zone, there are words here. I dragged this image from Google. So there's a couple of words that may not totally agree with, but generally comfort zone, it's a space where there's not much life going on. They've called it lifeless. I'm not quite sure if that's a key word, but it's very secure in that space. We feel very safe and secure. We are unchallenged in this space because we're just doing things that we have complete competency in. And it can often get boring. It's very stable. As I said before, it's safe. It's easy. We love doing easy things as human beings. When we have to make an effort, we're like, oh, here we go. It's going to take a lot of energy. So we love doing things that are easy. Then the other end of the spectrum is the panic zone. It's fearful and tense. We become exhausted and it's very stressful. So that fear zone, that panic zone is not where we want to be either. We want to be in the happy medium in between, which is the learning zone. This is where we feel excited, exhilarated. We're being challenged and we are more willing to take risks if the environment that is around us is safe emotionally. That's a very big part of it. And it's got here expectant. I imagine it's expectant of good things. So when I say that we need to get comfortable with conscious incompetence, this is what I'm talking about. Again, others would have seen this, but Dee, hopefully you will see, you will be interested in this. Let me see if I can make that a little bit bigger. I don't know if I can. Open a new window. Does that get bigger? Oh, it gets better, I think. Make sure there's no questions going on up here. This grid of four goes from unconscious incompetence round to the other way. Unconscious incompetence round to unconscious competence. And a very quick example that I'll give you that indicates what this is when you were first, when learning to drive a car. So unconscious means you're not aware. Incompetence means you're no good at it. So when you are unconsciously incompetent, you are not aware of your level of incompetency. So therefore, you're feeling pretty relaxed and easy. You don't even know what you're bad at. And so this is how you would have been at the age of 14, 15, 16, before you even had to sit in a car driver's seat. Unconscious, incompetence, pretty comfortable space, just unaware. Then when you got into the driver's seat at the age of 17 with your learner's permit, you moved into conscious incompetence. You became very aware of all the things you didn't know, how much pressure to apply the accelerator and the brake, how to turn the wheel, how to look for traffic without also turning the wheel. You became very aware of what you were incompetent about, and this is an uncomfortable space for all of us. Most of us do everything to avoid this space, which is why we stay in the comfort zone. Conscious incompetence and conscious competence is the learning zone, because when you're in that car and you've had a few lessons, you move into conscious competence. And conscious competence is when you are getting the skills predominantly right, that you're thinking every step of the way. You wouldn't be able to hold a conversation with somebody else in the car as you were driving, but you'll be able to drive properly from point A to point B without having a crash. So you're thinking very carefully about each step. And then we go back up into comfort zone, which is unconscious competence. And that means that we can now drive from point A to point B. We can think about what our plan is for the day. We can have a conversation with somebody else in the car. We can avoid a traffic accident over there. We can be aware of all these other things because we are not actively thinking about each of our completion of the tasks of driving. So we are doing it unconsciously and we're very competent in it. And so this comfort around conscious incompetence is a key element to constant and never-ending improvement, because it's not constant and never-ending staying the same. It's constant and never-ending improvement, which means we're pushing ourselves out to the learning zone and we're getting comfortable with the feelings, the normally negative feelings, but we start to see the benefit of the uncomfortable feelings of conscious incompetence because we know it's temporary. We know it's crucial to improvement, and we know that through practice and repetition, it's temporary. So that's another key element to constant and never-ending improvement. And the last element is feedback. Feedback tells us what and how to improve. Quite often, the areas of improvement that we need in order to get better are things that we're not aware of. If we were aware of them, surely we would be improving on them already. Or maybe we were aware of what needs to be improved, but we don't know how to improve it. We don't know the different methods that other people have used in the same situation to improve. And so this feedback is a crucial element of constant, never-ending improvement. So getting it right means that you have another step closer to successfully implementing this Can I concept within your team. And getting comfortable with feedback, you think about your experience of receiving feedback. Maybe it was from primary school where you're told, no, you've got a big red mark against all of these answers. And feedback slowly turned from your parents guiding you and helping you to other people making you feel less than, making you feel incompetent. And so feedback became something to fear rather than something to embrace. So there are different ways of delivering feedback. One of the traditional ways of delivering feedback is the PIP process or sandwich technique. And this is where you deliver praise, a point of praise. I'm just double checking that there's no questions there. So one or two points of praise, such as, just I'm talking to the receptionist. I'm going to use the receptionist's name, Joy. She's one that's always in my brain. She's such a delightful person. Joy, I love the way you are so friendly and positive with patients. And here comes the improvement. When you are processing their payments, I think the systems aren't helping you in that area. There is a better way of doing it. And I think that that will help you improve in the speed of getting those payments done. And then we go cover it up with praise. We get to the back end with praise. But I really do love the relationships that you build with patients. You are such a crucial element to our team. Now, the PIP process I see working very well, but I also understand the thought around it when people call it a shit sandwich. And it can, depending on how it's delivered, it can sometimes sound like the praises are just thrown in there to soften the blow. And so it's still shit that you're getting, and you sometimes still feel that way about yourself. But as I say, I'm part of a group called Toastmasters, and Toastmasters is a magnificent thing for all dental team members to be part of. And I've often thought to myself, there should be a dental arm to it when we're talking about how to discuss things with patients. But Toastmasters is basically a public speaking group. So they get you very comfortable speaking to groups of people and or getting up on a stage and speaking. It's not like a professional speaking group. It's more of people who are just wanting to improve it as a life skill. Toastmasters use the PIP process very, very well. So you'll get up and deliver a 5 to 7 minute speech, pre-prepared or just prepared. It's just a prepared speech. And at the end, you'll have an evaluator stand up and give you a couple of points, one or two points of praise. They'll identify the one thing that could be improved upon for future. And then they will follow that up with a couple of points, one or two points of praise again. So it may say something like, Julie, you're always so delightful when you get up and speak. Really, the whole crowd are just enamored with you. What I could suggest for the future is that you present it in such a way that doesn't disengage everybody and offend everybody. But your presence is great and you didn't have any ums or ahs, so well done. So that's the Toastmasters frame around feedback is something that I would love to see replicated in dental teams everywhere. because even though I made a funny example of how they did that there, what happens in Toastmasters is that if someone, the evaluations are considered so important, so much a part of our improvement on our intention of becoming better at speaking in public, that if someone was to get up, and it happens quite often, newer members find it very difficult to provide helpful improvement points for very experienced members because they're not doing the traditional ums and ahs, and they are engaging, they're keeping eye contact, they're doing all the usual things, good voice projection, good rate of speech, all of those sort of things. And they say, I couldn't find anything to improve upon. And the more experienced Toastmasters, I'm not quite sure what happens in every Toastmasters group, it certainly happens in mine, they come away as a speaker after that kind of evaluation and they go, oh, nothing to improve upon. What am I supposed to do with that? I don't know what to do now because I'm here to improve. I'm here to get better. I want whatever tiny morsel you had for me, I want it. And I think to myself, gosh, if we could really embrace that concept as part of Can I in dental teams, where someone can be delivered feedback and the recipient, instead of shrinking away or getting cross, they go, oh, thank you, because I want to improve. It's one of my values in life and it's one of our values as a team here. We want to improve. So thank you for giving me something. Thank you for giving me the morsel that I can move on with now and get better and be so positive and feel so empowered by feedback. This is extraordinary. And also, one of the key areas that I do suggest to dental teams all over, dental team members all over, is that if you ever have an interaction with a patient, can often happen when a patient's upset or angry, but an interaction actually with a patient and the patient left and you thought to yourself, you know, a classic example is that the receptionist is sitting at the front desk, the patient comes out from the surgery, the receptionist says, that's $350, and the patient says, what? Why? And you say, oh, well, there was the consultation, you know, where we did all the pulp testing and the test fractures and we were trying to figure out what was going on, the diagnosis of your issue, your condition. And we also took an x-ray, that was $50. And then we actually did the filling itself and that was that such and such. Oh, okay, yep, no worries, take it off my credit card. Okay, no worries, thanks. Here's your account receipt and the patient walks out and you're left as a receptionist thinking, that did not go well. He's not completely happy leaving his surgery. I didn't know what to do in the moment. Oh, well, hopefully it never happens again. And that's the way the scenario normally rolls out. However, I encourage all dental team members to, rather than have feedback as something that you're just receiving within your team that's unprompted, that you seek it out. There is nothing wrong and only wonderful things can come from going up to another team member whenever they're free. It could be your boss, it could be another dentist, it could be the steri nurse, another nurse, another receptionist, it could be anybody within their team and say, can I get a bit of feedback from you? Can you help me with something? This is what happened with this patient. And I know, and you step through the process, I said this, they said that. I had a sense that he left not happy. If that was to happen again, and it could well happen again in the future, can we role play, can we chat about what I could be saying next time in order to get a better result next time? Let's talk about that. And so to have feedback as a viable, welcomed option within your team as a path of improvement, rather than just being satisfied with the mediocre, rather than just hoping that I'm better next time, but not actually identifying how to be better next time. And that's the key around feedback. It's the identification of how to be better next time. And so with the PIP process, I've been an advocate for it because I see it being rolled out in a highly effective way in Toastmasters. It's been my experience for the last, I think, 10 years I've been a member of it being the path of my improvement in that space. And I see it with, you know, people, members, new members come in terrified of being under scrutiny, and very quickly they step into that space of the scrutiny is magnificent. The scrutiny is why I'm here. I can't expect better to get better at public speaking if I don't embrace the scrutiny and flip the meaning I have around scrutiny from something attacking me or negative to something that emboldens me to improve, giving me the juice in order to improve. So with that in mind, I'm always intrigued how the PIP process can sound like a shit sandwich from the recipient. And instead, let's talk about feed forward. Feed forward is a concept, and I might be butchering it a little bit because I learned about it in a book that I read of Marshall Goldsmith. He is a self-awareness coach and like a management coach. He's magnificent. He's just tremendous, Marshall Goldsmith. And he has, so as I say, if you look, research this concept, I may be getting it wrong, but this is how I think it works beautifully within team environments, within dental practices. Feed forward is all about, let's stop identifying something you did wrong in the past, because you can only feel bad about that. It's in the past. You can do nothing about it now. Let's instead flip it. And this is where that asking your colleagues for feedback with, if this should happen again, can we role play what I could do next time? Role play, because I want to get the experience of saying these words. And so if it happens again, those words will more likely come to the fore. Feed forward is less about when you had that interaction with Sally the patient, you came across a bit rude or a bit abrupt or a bit impatient. Could you stop that and be more patient and less abrupt and more kind and friendly next time? For a start, that's way too broad in general, but we'll talk about specifics in a minute. So flip it to, you know what I think would be helpful? A great way for our team members to improve moving forward, or a great way for something that I've identified that may be an improvement for the future. When patients, every now and again, we come across patients that do require more of our time and energy. And I think part of the goal in customer service is extending ourselves that generosity of spirit of patience and friendliness and kindness with those ones. I think it's easy to do friendly with friendly patients. I think it's less easy to do friendly with difficult patients. It's easy to be patient with patients who are timely. It is less easy to be patient with patients who love a long chat and dawdle and take time out of our day. But I think that it is most important to do these sort of things when it's difficult rather than just when it's easy. Doing things the right thing when it's difficult, being the patient person, being the kind, friendly team member to a patient, when it's difficult is when it matters most. That's where personal improvement comes from. And so rather than identify what you did wrong yesterday or an hour ago, I'm going to say, you know what? Something that I reckon that you would see some improvement in is if, when you're dealing with patients who are taking your time, that you just hold that space with them and you're patient anyway, that you just accept that it's going to take the time it's going to take in order for that patient to leave delighted. Because we don't want just 80% of the patients to leave delighted. Our goal is to have 100% of our patients to leave delighted. Now, delivering any kind of feedback, whether it be feed forward, whether it be the PIP process, it's always going to be a challenge for the recipient. And because it's a challenge for the recipient, it's going to be a challenge for the deliverer. Unless you build in part of your team culture, the process of the concept of can I, and that feedback is a crucial element to can I, and we all love it, and that's how we improve, and we're all getting it. And this is the other thing, we're all getting it. We're all getting the feedback, which leads me into my next slide, if you will, my next little thing here. And that is, actually, just prior to that, before I jump into the employer 360 degree feedback, I want to jump into this screen. Again, regular attendees to these sessions will have seen this before. I call it the parent-child frame. And I don't mean it to be demeaning in any way for managers of other people. When you're managing another person, you don't even need to be classified as a manager. But when you are managing another person, providing them feedback, if you step into the natural roles of parent and pursue and perceive the person you're speaking with as child, what it does is it helps you understand the clarity with which you need to communicate. And it indicates the level and type of support you need to show team members when developing skills. So when we think about a child coming to a parent with a math problem, or they're having an interaction with a child, a bully at school, and you're coaching them through it, you think about the kindness, the patience, the specificity of message that you would be providing your child if had they been in that position. And then think to yourself, how can I replicate that approach to a team member that I'm providing feedback for? And all of a sudden, the conversation will be wildly different. So the parent-child frame works a lot of the times with management of teams. Stepping into a parent-child frame can help you identify what actually is going on with people. So if a child was mucking up, you wouldn't think, oh, they're just mucking up. You would think, why are they mucking up? Oh, are they feeling unsure about something? Are they feeling insecure about something? And you'd also, you know, you'd bring in a foster child into the family and you think, I have to prepare my kids for this because they won't know what's going on. And it may bring up uncomfortable feelings for them, which will then make them act out. So when you bring a dental coach or consultant into your team, using the parent-child frame, you'd go, oh my gosh, I need to really have good communication with my team members around this and talk about it as a group and identify where the challenges are, that the discomfort that they might be feeling in order for this to be a successful process. So the parent-child frame can really help. The other thing that I do want you to be aware of, and I mentioned it last time, I can't remember why, but just the specificity that you need when you are providing feedback often is the time that people are given too broad a feedback and they're not quite sure where to move from there. Saying to a team member, you got to be more patient with the patients, it could be too broad. Rather than saying, with that particular patient, they do take a little bit more time out of your day. And I know that you feel like you're not getting your work done, but just be rest assured that when I know you're talking with a patient like that, I know it's just taking the time it's taking and it is taking away from your work. And I'm okay with that because as a practice, one of our values is we are here for our patients. We want them to leave delighted. Or it could be, I want you to get the accounts done quicker, like process the payments at the end of the patient visit done quicker, rather than really becoming quite specific about it and saying, okay, what tends to take the time? Is it that the printer takes so long to warm up and constantly does a cleaning just when you're about to print an invoice? So get really specific. This is exactly what I expect as a manager in terms of behavior or attitude or action, rather than be broad. If you have provided feedback to a staff member, two things need to happen. One, you need to make sure that staff member knows what they're walking away with. So are they getting the right message? And so ask them what their thoughts are around what you've provided with them. Don't just dump something on them and then walk away. Say, this is what I've suggested for you. What do you think about that? How do you feel about that? How do you see yourself rolling out that new system or that new action? Tell me about what you think about that. Tell me what's going on for you. I love that question. Tell me what's going on for you. The other thing that needs to happen is the minute you provide feedback, with minor things, it's not necessary. But if you've provided important, crucial feedback that requires a shift in attitude, behavior, systems, rollout of systems with a staff member, check in with them after a couple of days and say, how are you going with shifting that? How are you going with what I suggested? Find out if there's barriers. Find out if they've actually understood you properly. and just provide the feedback, that opportunity for further feedback and support. Provide that support to them. I hate the term now. I've grown to hate it. We're all in this together. I've heard it way too often, but I do find myself coming back to it quite often with dental teams, that if you've got as a whole group this constant never-ending improvement concept going in your culture, it means everybody, not just the team members. And so we're all this together. Remember, like, I'm supporting you with your changes because you've identified things in me too, and I need your support as well. I need your feedback as well as a leader, as a manager. One of the other members of this group said golden words to me. I mentioned they did the staff satisfaction surveys, and they went down that process, and I did my assessment report on it. And part of my report, due to the feedback that the staff had given, was that everything had improved over the past either 6 months or 12 months. I think it was 6 months. Everything had improved. And I said to her, are you fresh to the role? Because everything's improved in the last 6 months. And she said, no. I just recognised that I may have been the problem. And so I started to change. And I'm like, oh, because that's what self-awareness is. That's what improvement is. Maybe it's something that I can do. Maybe the results that I'm achieving, or the lack of results, the bad results that I'm achieving, is maybe I've got a big part to play in that. That's wonderful. That is constant, never improvement. Maybe it's me that needs to change. Maybe I've got stuff to do. And I'm loving it because I love that process of getting better and better at something difficult. It's one of the most challenging things, I believe, is managing a team of people. One of the most rewarding things is being on the self-discovery journey and the self-improvement journey, that can I journey in that space, and just tangibly feeling like you're getting better and better at it all the time. It is enormously satisfying. Okay. So because of the fact we're all in this together, we need to have a bit of 360, possibly 360 feedback. It's 3 minutes to the hour. I might be running 5 minutes late, but I will make it as snappy as I can without making it too rushed. This is a form that's part of this card. This is something that you are free. I might open it up in a new tab, take a sip while it's loading. Employee, employer, 360 degree feedback. 360 degrees means, you know, we're doing it from both sides here. We are all on the path of constant and never-ending improvement. We understand that feedback is a vital step in this process. When delivered thoughtfully, always deliver feedback in a very thoughtful, caring way with the other person's reality of high concern to you. Feedback is a powerful tool in all of our development. For each of the questions below, mark the response that best characterizes how you feel about the statement. So the employer has a particular employee in mind and thinks, do they make logistical decisions in accordance with the goals of the practice? Excellent, satisfactory, neutral, needs improvement, needs a lot of improvement, and so on and so forth. Manages patients in accordance with the customer service policy, works with a positive and happy attitude, respects the directives of the employer, communicates the communication with the employer, is open to doing things in new ways, receives feedback professionally. But then that's just what the employer does with the employee in mind. The employee is also given a form, and they are to have the employer or their manager in mind when they're answering the questions. Communication with team. Provision of necessary and requested training. Allocation of necessary time to complete responsibilities. Works with a positive and happy attitude. Expectations on team performance. Considers new ideas carefully. Allows team members to work without too much scrutiny. You know how much I hate the micromanagement, because I used to be one, then I was micromanaged. So I learnt the lesson very, very well. So that is a form that you may be interested in completing with your team. It may feel a bit to do it, And it's a little, it's got a little bit of the Johari window about it. And what the Johari window is this. Johari was two psychologists, I think they were. One of them was named Joe, their surname was Joe something, and the other one was Harry something or other. So they called it the Johari window. And this is self-awareness. This is the journey of self-awareness. How if you can make yourself move through this process, you will grow and develop quicker than you could ever have dreamed. It's just about changing the meaning to the feedback from something challenging and attacking to something that is, I'm going to embrace because I value this journey of improvement. Now, what the Johari window is open, blind spot, hidden and unknown. So open are the things that we know about ourselves and others know about us as well. Hidden is the things that are known to ourselves that are not known to others. They're things that we wouldn't share with others. Unknown are the things that nobody knows about us, but also we don't know about us. It's deep, deep subconscious stuff. And then blind spot. This is where the gold is. This is where you will feel yourself in the learning zone and you will feel uncomfortable. But this is where the gold is, the blind spot. This is stuff not known to self, but known to others. Did you know that you sound very aggressive when you tell me what to do? Do you know that you are very hurtful when you judge everyone on their appearance? Did you know that you are cross and angry and stroppy around the practice all the time? Do you know that it's quite impossible to please you because you are always just concentrating on the negative? The blind spot, if you can, and with all of the, with feedback, the Johari window, the can I concept, all elements of the can I concept, if you can create an environment that fosters safety and trust. And when I say safety, I'm not talking about physical safety. I'm talking about emotional safety. It is safe to make mistakes. You won't be penalized for it. I won't provide any emotional cost. I won't give you the silent treatment. I won't get grumpy with you. I won't point out your failures in front of your peers. You have got emotional safety here. I support you. I embrace everything that it takes for you to improve. And trust that if, for example, someone was to say, if you were going to say the mistakes policy, we're rolling it out in the practice straight away. And the next time somebody made a mistake, you just jumped all over them like you traditionally do. That's a breakdown of trust. Now, when it's a new thing that you're learning, you can say, oh, I have taken the day and it hasn't left me that I reacted badly the old traditional way to the mistake that you made, Jackie. When you made that mistake yesterday, I reacted in the old way. It's taken me a whole day to fully realize that that's what I've done and that's why I was feeling bad. It was right here. So I apologize for that. Next time it happens, I'm going to react with the way that the policy states, which means I'm going to embrace the mistake. So I do apologize that I reacted badly. However, you can still trust in the new policy and me to be able to tackle it because I've owned up to when I did it wrong. And I've assured you that I'm going to take every effort to make sure it doesn't happen that way again. I'm going to do the right thing next time, or what we've deemed to be the right thing next time. So trust isn't that you can never make mistakes. It's actually owning up and apologizing and then adjusting behavior after a mistake. But trust is that you walk what you speak, that you're walking the talk, that when I say that this is what we're going to be implementing as part of the team, I'm going to be playing my role as well. I may get it wrong every now and again, just like all of you will get things wrong every now and again as well. But it's a journey. It's a constant and never-ending improvement. We're never going to get there. We're never finished at one day. And we say, oh, 29th of September, what date is it? 2035. We're done. We've got no more improvement. We're perfect now. Life is golden from this point on. No, it's a constant, never-ending improvement journey. And so therefore, when we make mistakes, when we stumble, when we require more practice, when we're feeling uncomfortable, that it's a safe and trusting environment so we all feel properly supported in that space. There's no point in trying to generate that Can I principle, the principles behind Can I in your team, when there's no safety and trust there. The safety and trust are implicit and need to be there. 3:05, I'm done. Thank you for your patience. And for the lovely D, what we do on this then, we click into this card. I take the top priority off it because it's done. I tick that it's been done today, complete. And this register here will become a recording and I'll attach the recording to this card. I drag this card over to complete it. And what we've spoken about today really does, and just when I'm, as I'm closing up, Dee, give me a little final thing. I hope you got something out of today, let me know, is a lovely segue into encouraging you to jump online live with Charles on Wednesday at 5:00 Victorian Sydney, Queensland time. Because he is talking about building great dental teams that create wonderful business results. And so he's been doing this work for such a long time and he's so insightful, and the principles and insights he'll deliver to you will truly alter the way you manage yourself and teams moving forward. So I do hope you are encouraged to visit that one on that one live. I'm going to change that priority to top because it's the next one we're doing. Take it off mid. And low to mid. Get off the low. I encourage you to jump onto the Club Hub once I've sent you through the emails. And I bid you all farewell. If you have any questions regarding the session, please phone me, email me anytime. I look forward to hearing down the track how things are going with your team culture around this concept for those that are implementing it. But have a lovely afternoon, everybody. I do look forward to seeing you next time. See you later.